This week on Straight Talk Africa. In a few weeks, a new administration ascends to power in the White House and carves out new rules of engagement with the world. How will the America First approach of President-elect Donald Trump affect U.S. engagement with Africa? Straight Talk Africa starts right now. Welcome to Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. I'm your host, Vincent McCauley. President-elect Trump is assuming power on January 20th, 2025. He is entering the world stage at a time when multiple wars and crises are unraveling. During a news conference on Monday in Florida, he mentioned that he is working to get Israeli hostages held by Hamas released, but downplayed its expectations about his promise to solve the Russia-Ukraine war, describing the conflict as a tough one. Africa hasn't come up yet, and many are wondering, what kind of engagement will the new administration pursue with the African continent? To gain insight, I have here in studio Ambassador Rama Yad. She is a senior director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council. And Ambassador Tibonaj, the former United States Assistant Secretary of State for Africa Affairs during the first Trump administration. Welcome to both of you. Yes. And so we've seen, you know, so much is happening, actually, as we mentioned, as the incoming president gets ready to be sworn in. And one of the things that we are now witnessing, around the world is the situation in Syria. And people are trying to look at how it's going to transform the geopolitics in that region, but also how might it impact Africa. So if I may start with you, Ambassador Yad, how do you see that impacting the continent, and to what extent can we expect the next administration to take more interest in how the whole question of security in the Middle East impacts what happens on the continent of Africa?
My first thought is Africa has not been really mentioned during the presidential campaign, neither by Kamala Harris nor by Donald Trump. So it's very difficult to imagine or guess what the new administration could do regarding the promises during the campaign. But we can build from what he did during his first term, and maybe from what his advisors say about Africa. I do believe that the critical minerals that are very important, Africa is home of 30% of critical minerals, will be key for the next administration for two reasons. First, the importance of the energy transition, of course, and two, because the competition with adversaries like China or Russia and others is so strong that it's impossible for the United States, no matter who the president is, to ignore the African continent. Mm-hmm.
Ambassador Naj, we witnessed a protest in Niger not long ago, people saying they want the U.S. troops to get out of the country. And so we have had a situation in the Sahel region where the citizens of those countries don't want the West there. And yet Russia is gaining footage and also rather footing. And at this time, as we speak, there are concerns that Russia could be moving some of its war armaments from Syria to countries like Libya. How can we expect the next administration to deal with the security in the Sahel region, dealing with the jihadists and all those that cause insecurity?
Yeah, in my view, I hate to say this, but I think the United States mishandled the entire Sahel during the past number of years, because the coups happened, and unfortunately, the U.S., what I would call selectively hypocritical. We called Ouagadougou a coup. We called Bamako a coup with Niger. We waited and waited and waited, and then we called it a coup. And then Chad, we never called it a coup. And the people on the ground realize that. You know, they see through that. And as a result, the people were very angry with the United States. We tended to lecture the people who came into power, tell them what they did wrong. And as a result, we lost out on Niger. We lost two air bases that cost about $300 million. And, you know, when the people came out to protest, none of the signs said, we want elections now. What they said was, we want stability, peace, and then across the all of Africa, people want jobs. When those kind of coups happen, what they don't need is to be isolated. That's when they need engagement. That's when they need countries like the United States and others to talk to them so that something positive can happen. When you ignore them, when you block them out, when you lecture them, that's when you have relations that are ruptured. Americans get kicked out. And, of course, the Russians are always ready to come in. They can come in very quickly. You know, the one thing the Russians are very good at is regime survival. They may not be very good at beating back the jihadists, but they're quite good at making sure the regime survives. So I think that during the next Trump administration, you will see a lot more reality in how we deal with those governments. Because, you know, we can talk democracy, democracy, democracy. What the people are really looking for is legitimacy.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Yad, you talked about the competition with the other side. And we know Russia is one of the big competitions. Of course, China, and you mentioned that the critical minerals will probably determine how the current, the incoming administration will engage with Africa. But from your assessment, is that competition unhealthy for Africa necessarily?
You know, the Africa President Trump will see in the next weeks is different from the Africa he left in 2020. Things have been changing very quickly. The competition is still there, that's right, with China and more with Russia. China is the first trading partner of African and has been for 20 years, and it's confirmed of African countries. Russia is a rising star in Africa, in some parts of Africa, including the Sahel, we just mentioned, because of Wagner or Africa Corps presence and the propaganda. But Russia is not at the origin of the problems between the Sahelian countries and the Western countries, because they're, including the United States and France, you know, but they have used this situation to gain more ground, you know, more credibility. So, but what is different now is the competition is not only with China and Russia, and it's also with regional and middle powers, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Emirates, Turkey, of course, India, Indonesia, all these countries are more and more partnering with African countries, which means that, yeah, you're right, which means that Africa has options now, So the risk is now if we have an isolationist attitude from the U.S. or any Western country, you can have America first, and you will have Africa first because of these options. Mm-hmm. And that's why it's very important to understand the new African ground. Africans have options. They have the possibility to partner with any country depending on where their interests are. And that's something that is very important. I agree with Ambassador when he says about values in foreign policy. It won't be enough. Lecturing people is not enough anymore because of the growing part of importance of interest and those options African countries have.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Naj, years ago when you were Assistant Secretary of State, you did say something. America first does not mean America alone. Right. So what kind of what comfort can African countries get from this? Because whenever they heard this, they thought of the word she just used, isolationist, and yeah. Therefore thought Africa is going to be left to the side.
I think that Africa does not need to worry about isolationism. Yes, America first, but from the point of view of Nigeria, it's Nigeria first. You know, for every country, it should be that country first, and wherever the interests intersect, there you have a great deal. And I think that will be a word often used, will be deals. because everyone says, yes, President Trump is transactional. He is, but that can be a very good thing, because that means that there will be focus on economics, trade, investments, and things like that. I mean, look at America's Africa policy historically has been basically giving development aid, humanitarian aid, and a lot of lectures. When interaction, if you're talking about real partnership, it means business, it means trade, it means listening. You know, that's a new word for the Americans, is to listen. You know, as the ambassador said, yes, Africa has options. Africa's in a much stronger position. And I think, President Trump was the first to really realize the global competition from China as a serious adversary. And now we're talking about critical minerals. We're talking about global power competition. And we're talking about Africa having options.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Yed, in terms of those options, how can Africa leverage the resources it has or the other advantages and the options it has in order to benefit fully from a relationship, say, with the United States?
I think the maybe one of the best ways to do that is to voice their needs. Africa is now has seats in many international bodies. You know, we have been talking about the G20 since last year. The African Union is a new member, a permanent new member of the G20. It's an interesting place for African countries to voice their needs in terms of development, for example, in terms of climate finance, in terms of security, of competition, of business, of trade. That's the first way, I guess. And there's also pending reforms, Bretton Woods system, IMF and World Bank. The debate has been around how can we support African countries to be more heard in the Bretton Woods institutions. That is still a pending conversation and an unfinished reform. There is another unfinished reform. It's the Security Council. African countries would like to have more seats in the permanent seats in the Security Council of the United Nations. So I think that's the best way to deal with them, mm-hmm. to trade with them, because these are institutions that the United States can control, which is the case of the other big powers, you know. And I don't think that African youth, believes in the Russian model or in the Chinese way of life. But I do believe that they continue to dream of the American model, you know, in terms of way of life, of cultural values and everything. But it's very important to recognize Africa's strategic importance in the world today.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Well, it's time for a short break. When we return, we'll continue our discussion on the ways the new Trump administration might engage with the African continent. Stay with us.
In times of change, when the world seems uncertain, and what we hear doesn't reflect what we see, we seek the truth. When we are told only part of the story, we lose trust. In moments of crisis, our dreams, hopes, and wishes for a better tomorrow depend on a free press. At Voice of America, we bring you the stories that people take risks to see. We connect the world and unite it with truth. At Voice of America, we show you the whole picture.
Health, wellness, sport, beauty, medical breakthroughs. Healthy Living cares about your well-being. What are the main health concerns in Africa and around the world? Find out the latest on coronavirus. Connect with our experts and ask them questions.
How long does the virus stay?
Join me, Lino Khmudu, in Washington, every week on Healthy Living. right here on VOA.
The African diaspora has long played a vital role in supporting families back home. Today, this has evolved as more members of the diaspora shift their focus from sending money to making long-term investments. On the next edition of Our Voices, we'll explore opportunities for Africans in the diaspora to find financial success in their native countries, challenges they might face, and explore innovative platforms that are helping to bridge the gap. Join the conversation each week right here on Our Voices.
We do need Donald Trump in Africa for job creation, more jobs for us. There are so many teenagers that are unemployed. Seriously, we do need him.
I want Donald Trump to give us more money in South Africa.
President Trump should just leave Africa alone for a little bit, because there's no wars here, there's no troubles. Already we're peaceful, good weather. He must just sort out his issues that Mr. Biden left first before he starts affecting Africa. Because Africa's already been affected for hundreds of years. We don't need it.
I think investment is always good. I don't really think there's much more apart from trade that he can actually sort of help us with.
First of all, I would like President Trump to offer us an alternative to BRICS. If we have too much dependence on Russia and China, they can take advantage of that. I'm not totally against the dollar. I'm also, you know, reluctant to also just totally submit to the West. In a broader sense, I just want President Trump to compete with BRICS, you know what I mean? So that we're not almost chained to BRICS, because they, you know, they're bailing us out and there's, you know, there's making all sorts of investments, but they also have their own interests. And so I'd like Africa to uphold some sort of a neutral stance, you know what I mean, and not just be pulled east or west.
Welcome back. You're with Straight Talk Africa, coming to you from our headquarters in Washington, D.C. We're discussing the U.S. engagement with Africa under the new Trump administration. I'm joined by Ambassador Ramayad, Senior Director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council, and Ambassador Tibuch, United Assistant Secretary of State for Africa Affairs during the first Trump administration. We just heard a few opinions from Johannesburg in South Africa, and they seem to expect more investments from the U.S. Now, Ambassador Naji, you know, we talked about that. Yad mentioned kind of the youth of Africa, and the youth of Africa actually have totally different expectations from the older members of the continent. They are more attuned to what's happening. They're not so much into aid and that kind of approach of sympathy, but they want jobs, they want business, they want investment. And you've talked about the youth of Africa as a tsunami.
Yes, exactly. So the youth of Africa and their viewpoint actually line up with President Trump, because, when first Trump administration, we called it a youth tsunami because, in our view, it was one of the greatest forces coming out in the world in the 21st century. And people were not paying enough attention to it. And as you said, you talk to the youth and what they want is jobs, jobs, jobs. They're online. They can see what young people in the other parts of the world are doing, kind of jobs they have, and that's exactly what they want. And that's exactly what they should have. And then you have leaders who are 2, 3, dare I say sometimes 4 years old, 4 times older than the average population. And yet they know they're living in countries which are incredibly rich. Democratic Republic of Congo, the richest country on earth when you look at minerals, and they're not participating in it. So along with the jobs, they want good governance. And if they don't get it, I think that the world is going to have incredible turbulence.
Yes. Now, Ambassador Yad, you know, in line with that, the first administration of President Trump did create the Development Finance Corporation, which just, observed the fifth anniversary, I think a few days ago. Yeah. There was also the Prosper Africa Initiative, yep, which Ambassador Najee may talk a little bit more about in terms of how they push this to help engineer growth in Africa. Now, the youth of Africa, as has been said, they want their governments to do something too. They don't want to be in a situation where they're helpless in their countries. They want their countries to do more. So how can they engage with the U.S. in a more beneficial way than sitting back and waiting for foreign aid, but rather the what we just talked about, transactional kind of relationship? Mm-hmm. How can Africa ensure that those relationships actually yield results in terms of job creation, wealth creation in a continent that is awash with mineral resources, with so much wealth?
Yeah, I think job creation is the number one need in Africa because of this use, of course, very important. And if they don't have any jobs, they will attack the institutions. That would be the consequence. We know how how these young people, these young opinions, played a huge role in the Sahelian coup, and even in democratic countries. Look into Senegal, for example. The youth mobilized its network in the country and demonstrated every day during months until they have been able to change their destiny. So the youth will play more and more a very important political role on the continent.
Yeah, but here is a frustration, and I want to stay with you on this a little bit. Most of the youth we speak to say they're so frustrated to see their leaders who actually depend on the kind of aid they get or loans squander the same money that is going to be paid back as loans instead of, using that money to develop their countries. Yeah. And so they see a sense of irresponsibility from their leaders. So how can they have, you know, any confidence even in their own governments?
Because there is what I name a new Afro sovereignty, for them and for this generation, assistance is not the solution. Assistance, I mean, Africa has been under assistance for decades, and it doesn't work, and it's not about dignity either. So for them, they want to prioritize business, investment, but the problem, and that's why I think the transactional policy is the best way to tackle these issues. But at the meantime, there are key points any Western administration should address. It's very easy to advocate for investment, but we know that the investment to Africa are impossible because of the interest rates, because of the rating agencies, how they rate African economies, because of this culture of risk. When it comes to Africa, you have so many investors saying, oh, we cannot invest in Africa because it's a risky market. If it was really the case, do you think that China would have been investing so many billions during two decades? And this is not good for the Western competition in Africa. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think that for the next administration and its allies, it's very important to unlock the investment and the international, the financial markets to support can increase. And more fair, they are not asking more to have the same rights, economic rights, financial rights like the other countries. That's the key problem here. Mm-hmm. And that's the best way, I think, to release the investment. I would like to remind you that for the next two decades, Africa has a need of almost $3 billion per year to cover its climate needs, or the consequences of the global warming on the continent. This is huge. And the development needs are also huge. The continent need infrastructure, hospitals, housing, schools, all these things that require a lot of investment. Yeah.
So, Ambassador Najee, you come from a previous administration, which means there are no surprises, not too many surprises, we can expect in terms of the engagement. But is Africa still seen, she says, being seen as too risky does not help to actually spur that economic growth because of lack of investment?
No, I wouldn't say it's seen as too risky. It is almost seen as not known, because the big global corporations can do business anywhere. But they also are not the kind of investments that Africa really needs. They need the medium and small-sized companies that create a lot of employment. And to get those to invest in Africa, you really do need an organization like Prosper Africa. And that was the concept behind Prosper Africa when we set it up. Unfortunately, we did not set it up early enough, and it wasn't taken on by the Biden administration and you know, strengthened up, because there were two parts to it. The part here to help American businesses that are interested in Africa, direct them there. But the part on Africa, the U.S. embassies were going to play the role between those investors and those businesses on the Africa side. And then there's a third very important part, because there has to be also pressure put on African governments to implement the kind of reforms that welcome business. Because if you're going to make a multi-million dollar investment, and if you know that if there's a dispute with somebody and it happens to be the third cousin of the Minister of Justice, guess who's going to win in that court case? Mm-hmm. So those are the kind of things that have to change, and the price of electricity and on and on and on. But so it's a three-part reform process, but it could work fantastically well if it's coordinated.
Yes. As we're running out of time now, Ambassador Yad, you know, the continent, we talk about Africa sometimes as if it's one big block with these similar interests, but how challenging is it that these are different countries, they have different approaches to their engagement, even with the United States and other interested parties? How does that challenge any policy?
It's a way to underestimate Africa. You know, Africa is rich of its cultures, its countries, 55 countries, you know, rich of its populations. We're talking about the youth, rising youth, but there's also the Silver Age that is growing on the African continent with a huge impact. So it's very important for any administration incoming or ongoing. It's very important to capture the diversity of the continent in terms of countries, in terms of culture, in terms of generations, in terms of markets.
But also you're dealing with very mixed forms of governments, you know. We have
exactly.
Democracies,
Africa is not the land
military-led
of,
right
of
now.
Just of coup yeah. or authoritarian regimes. I just released a few weeks ago a piece for the Atlantic Council explaining that there are more and more people attached to the democratic values, and more countries organized fair elections, from Senegal to Ghana. You know, Namibia just elected the woman, but nobody talked about that. So it's very important to change the narrative. I'm not talking about being more optimistic. I'm just talking about better describing the reality, to be more fair with the African continent. But for some people, you know, it's easier to maintain the African continent in some dark place, you know, because it confirms their bias and prejudice against the continent. And it has a true impact on investment, because people, they watch TV, investors, and they decide to invest on the continent depending what they watch on TV. And if the report are all dark and pessimistic, mm-hmm. they won't invest, you know. So it's very important to work on that.
Yes, and we know that Ambassador Naj, you are an Africa optimist.
Afro-optimist, absolutely. Yeah. Always have been.
Yeah.
And I have huge hopes for Africa in this coming administration.
Yeah, so we all look forward to great things,
right? To see that, yeah.
Thank you very much. Well, we have to leave it here. Thank you both for the thought-provoking discussion. We appreciate your time, Ambassador Rama Yad, Senior Director of the Africa Center at the Atlantic Council, and Ambassador Tibonaj, former United States Assistant Secretary of State for Africa Affairs. Thanks to our affiliate stations for broadcasting Straight Talk Africa across the continent. I'll see you next time.